Additionally, though the crew is relatively small for a space station, they are still trained soldiers, and 50 of them in a relatively confined area would not be a fight we would be capable of winning in a head-on assault. You want us to just sit on the ship with our thumbs up our asses while you smooth-talk your way into some fuel? Asha said.
I do not understand much of your phrasing, but yes, you will remain on board while I relay a cover story to the crew as to why we are here. A lone transport this far out into dead space will raise some questions of its own, even without their equipment. The presence of our ship will be curious.
And what happens if your hack fails, or they don't buy your bullshit? Asha asked.
Then more drastic action may be required. For this reason, you will be hiding in the armory.
Lucas thought briefly about being trapped in a room full of guns with a woman who just tried to kill him for the third, fourth time, but he supposed in this case it was unavoidable. This sounds incredibly dangerous, he said, thinking more of the entire plan than Asha's recent instability.
Yes, but of all the fuel stations I researched, this is the most isolated and very much understaffed. Mathematically, it is our best chance for survival. It is our only option.
The room fell silent after that. The unpronounceable star system they were approaching was still 5 days out. There were no more fun fighter pilot diversions, nor learning reflexive Sorin verbs. Lucas and Asha spent their time training in real life, with her especially attempting to regain much of the strength she'd lost. Should her services be required, she had to be in top form, and she was pushing herself to a degree that surprised Lucas. Asha returned to her storage cube-based lifting routine, but cycled in many of Lucas's own isometric exercises, and the two of them sprinted against each other down the longest hallway they could find. Lucas won every time, but by the final day she was within a half second of catching him. Panting, Lucas attempted to catch his breath, as the 10 back and forths they'd just completed had him winded. Asha walked around with her arms above her head, her tank top completely soaked in sweat.
See what you can do with a good night's sleep?
Lucas said in between breaths.
Please, I've had personal trainers since I was 16. Do you really think this is a tough workout you've crafted?
Her breathing was already returning to normal. She started boxing the air furiously and spun around with a barefoot kick that Lucas remembered connecting to his jaw the last time he'd seen it.
Are you really going to kickbox 8-foot-tall aliens to death?
Well, you won't let me in the armory yet, so I have to make do. Besides, it's about speed and flexibility.
She flung out 3 sharp jabs and an uppercut before Lucas could even blink.
And yeah, I think if push came to shove, I could knock one of those things out cold.
Lucas doubted this was the case, but she had come a long way in under a week. He decided to relay to her the information he'd learned about Noah. He was in the hall with them, busying himself with a bit of foam tubing he'd managed to pry off somewhere. But even if he had spoken, he didn't have the cognitive abilities to process what was being said. Afterward, Asha merely shrugged.
No thoughts? Lucas said, a bit caught off guard.
I mean, we knew he was the kid of one of those monsters. What does it matter which one? I guess he'll be bigger than us in a few months, but other than that, it doesn't really matter.
Lucas supposed she was right. Yes, he could see the chief's mental state deteriorate in the pages of the book, but given the circumstances he was in, it hardly seemed like a genetic trait. And other than his initial bout of silence and his burns, Noah was a happy, healthy kid, at least until the next cosmic disaster turned their little group on its head once again. And one was looming.
Do you think this is going to work?
Asked Asha as she leaned up against the wall. I've no idea. Alpha's smart, but it seems a bit far-fetched, even with everything we've been through so far.
Won't they recognize him if he's some top-priority criminal?
Puh, would you recognize him? They all look alike to me.
It was xenophobic, but undeniably true. Other than being various shades of gray, only minor variances like eye color and slightly different sized and shaped facial features were noticeable.
The only one that had ever really stood out to Lucas was the dark black Omicron. Suddenly, they heard a voice from behind them.
The crew is a long way from Zulla, and there is likely no reason they would have been dispatched my image given their remote location.
Alpha stood with some sort of electronic pad in hand. And yes, of course we can tell each other apart. It is a trait of any living species.
I was joking, Alpha,
Asha said drolly. Lucas interjected.
So why is Omicron black when the rest of you are light or dark gray?
Alpha pondered the question.
He is a... Naturally, you do not have a word for it. The closest equivalent term might be shadow.
Is he just a different race, like the same way we have different skin tones on Earth?
No, it is not the same, though Saurians do share that trait. Rather, a shadow is a specific creation. All Zolans are altered genetically from birth to increase strength and intelligence, but shadows are different.
He paused for a moment as Noah had crawled over to him and was grabbing his toe claw.
My father had argued against the procedure for years as inhumane, but with the escalation of the war, its use has only increased.
What exactly is a shadow?
They are Zolan, but genetically enhanced to unsafe levels. Only one out of every 1,145 survive the procedure, making it both highly dangerous and tremendously expensive. But those who emerge on the other side have tremendous speed, strength, and reflex capabilities, with the darkening of the skin an inescapable side effect. They also process information at a much faster rate. Imagine the way it feels when you are plugged into the cables. A shadow thinks at such speed at all times, with no cerebral fatigue. As such, shadows are often found in positions of great power, like Commander Omicron. Some say he was the first to ever live through the procedure.
Alpha walked past Lucas and Asha and twirled his metal claw, then stretched out his fingers.
Additionally, in extremely rare cases, shadows have exhibited psionic abilities. This development is recent, and we barely understand it.
Psionic abilities? Lucas asked.
What do you call them in your language? Telekinesis, telepathy, in small amounts. But it's only been recorded in a handful of shadows, all of which were quickly scurried off to covert operations before anyone could study the mutation.
Does Omicron have these powers?
Alpha shook his head.
Not that I have heard. If he truly was one of the first, or the first shadow, as he claims, that mutation was still two generations away.
How old is he exactly? Asha asked.
I would say he's approaching 450 cycles, or the equivalent of 600 of your years. But do not let his age fool you. He is still exceptionally dangerous.
Asha and Lucas looked at each other.
Alpha, how old are you?
It was an obvious question neither of them ever thought to ask until now.
215 Earth years. No, 216. Time has been difficult to keep track of as of late.
The pair was stone-faced.
Yes, I forgot. You endure short lifespans on Earth. What is it, 100?
More like 80, said Asha.
Simple advances in medicine can double that. Complex procedures can extend life even further. These days, most Zolans live to be around 500. Shadows quite a bit longer.
Asha and Lucas contemplated what they'd heard. Alpha continued.
If you will excuse me, I must finish work on this corruption algorithm. Perfection takes time.
The conversation shook Lucas up a bit as it reminded him exactly how over his head he was in this whole situation. As if space travel hadn't been enough. Now he had genetically altered psionic monsters to deal with, too. He felt like a medieval knight being tossed into battle with a Navy SEAL squadron centuries in the future. But in this case, the gap was untold millennia. How the hell would he survive this? But here he was, one of the only three humans left from Earth. He chalked it up to luck and blind chance, but maybe Asha was right. Maybe he'd earned his spot here. He'd survived bloody battle after bloody battle, and had only a few scars to show for it. What others who may have been considered Earth's greatest warriors were now left stranded on the slow-cooking rock. But if they'd come across Alpha and his ship, wouldn't they have just killed and eaten him on the spot? Perhaps Lucas had overlooked one of his most important qualities, restraint. Asha was something else entirely. There was a savvy about her, a will to survive that superseded all else. And yet she still managed to hang on to her humanity, unlike so many of the bloodthirsty left on Earth. She was an all-consuming inferno when she needed to be, but could bring herself down to mere embers in quieter times. Her recent brush with insanity was driven by love, not hate. She had passion in a world without hope. It was strange to see. Alpha was perhaps the biggest mystery of the three. He was like them now, a creature without a family or a world. His relatives were slaughtered by his own people, and after being branded a traitor to his planet for refusing brutality, Alpha was now being hunted across the galaxy. His only refuge was the very civilization his race had been trying to destroy for thousands of years. Through all of it, however, he had kept a cool head. There was always a fix for each problem, an answer for each question. Logic was his salvation, though Lucas wondered what sadness and rage brewed beneath his gray skin with all he'd been through. Poor little Noah had to grow up in this insanity. Lucas supposed it was better than a cannibal nursery, but the risk of death seemed to loom greater on board the ship. They'd barely escaped the solar system in one piece, and now they were charging straight into another risky venture. Lord only knew what they might find if they ever reached Sora. With the planet's history with Zala, Lucas couldn't be sure their menacing ship wouldn't be destroyed immediately without a question asked. And what was the alternative? Assured extermination by genetic supercreature Omicron. Quite the array of available options. Suddenly, a voice rang out through the water chamber where Lucas had been gathering his thoughts. It is time. Chapter 18. When they deactivated the core, Lucas sat in the captain's chair. He was responsible for maneuvering the Ark into Alpha's designated position. They were arriving at the refueling station's star system a day early, in order to start bombarding them with the fake solar storm Alpha had concocted. Should they show up at the exact moment the scrambling started, it would obviously be suspicious. Alpha deemed that a day would give them a reasonable window without letting Omicron gain too much ground. The glowing lights of the space-time tunnel slowly faded, and the ship made a loud noise that sounded like someone powering down a colossal vacuum cleaner. Soon, stars began to reappear in the view screen, arranged in formations Lucas had never seen. As he veered the ship around the newly plotted course, Lucas saw the central body of the system, a star burning an unfamiliar bronze color. A brown dwarf, Lucas remembered from his limited time in astronomy in school. It was smaller than their own sun, and governed over a system that had no natural life at all, like so many billions of others that lay just as desolate, according to Alpha. The sun grew larger and larger as Lucas raced toward it, until finally he saw his primary target, a small ashen planet not even the Zalans had bothered naming. It hung there motionless, and as Lucas approached, he saw that its gray surface was peppered by craters. They would begin their electronic assault from orbit around the scorched rock. The station circled a more distant planet on the other side of the star, but Alpha was confident his signal would travel the necessary distance. Once the ship was locked into its rotation, Alpha started broadcasting the faux solar storm out into the ether. In Lucas's monitor, the signal was visualized as a pulsating sphere, and a few minutes later its color changed and a readout indicated the disruption had found its intended target. The fuel station sensor systems were going haywire. For the next few hours, Lucas stared at the sun, shaded to a safe visible spectrum by the view screen. He was tired of training, both virtual and physical, and the celestial body allowed him a peace he hadn't managed to find in a long time. Once again, he quietly marked a milestone for humankind, the first of his species to reach another solar system. Too bad he wouldn't get a parade if he ever returned. In the distance, another planet loomed. The sphere was bright blue, but Alpha told him not to mistake it for water. It was purely gaseous and of no use to anyone. There were only 5 planets in the system, and the fuel depot orbited the one furthest from the central star. Being stationed in such a desolate place was undoubtedly not the most prestigious military assignment, and Lucas could only hope the soldiers there were foolish enough to believe Alpha's tricks. On the monitor, the scientist was tinkering with the core, making sure it had powered down correctly and would be able to reactivate once they made their escape. Asha, meanwhile, had finally been granted access to her beloved armory and was busy scurrying away weapons into locked storage bins in case the ship was searched. Each of their respective living quarters had been stripped of the books, furniture, clothing, and mattresses, all hidden away in various parts of the craft. It looked as it had the day they'd come aboard. The plan was for the human trio to hide inside the inner wall of the armory, should the ship warrant a walkthrough by the creatures. Noah rarely cried, but soon he would have to remain as silent as could be, and Alpha debated sedating him for the duration of the mission. Later that day, while they were busy removing the panel where they were to hide, Alpha appeared in the armory with one final directive.
There is an additional complication.
There always seemed to be one.
Readings indicate that there is a class cruiser parked at the station that is currently being repaired.
And how big is that? Asha asked.
Smaller than the ship we encountered on Earth, but much larger than this vessel, and one equipped with a full squadron of functional fighters.
That doesn't sound good, said Lucas.
It is not. It means, after refueling, we will have to destroy the station and the ship to ensure our escape. We are out of missiles, and the main gun remains offline. But even if this were not the case, Zolan fighters would shred this transport, even with the added maneuverability of the new core.
Alpha projected a hologram of a sleek-looking ship that dodged and weaved in space, a fighter. Lucas recognized it from his time spent in the simulation he had yet to master. Alpha wasn't joking when he said they were far more maneuverable. They packed a hell of a punch as well. The fighter's weapon systems easily outclassed what they had available on the transport. What happened to smooth-talking our way into the fuel station and leaving here in peace? Alpha shook his head.
Repairs have already begun on the station's sensors to combat the alleged solar storm. The scrambling may prove effective by the time we arrive, but I am no longer certain their equipment will remain jammed for the duration of our stay in the system. We must make contingencies.
Alpha began walking through the piles of weapon-filled boxes looking for something. When he found it, Lucas recognized the container immediately. You son of a bitch, I knew you were lying. Alpha dragged the locked crate into the center of the room.
I have indeed kept something from you.
Asha rolled her eyes. What else is new? Lucas couldn't bother spending more than a second being annoyed. All right, so what's in it if it's not above your clearance level after all? Alpha typed a complex code into the lock, and the container hissed as it opened. Inside, the box was ray-shielded, the way the prison cells had been. But Lucas recognized a symbol through the light barrier immediately. The yellow and black circle was unmistakable. Tell me that isn't what I think it is, Lucas said breathlessly.
It is a nuclear device of human creation.
Asha's eyes weren't rolling anymore and were wide open instead. You mean to tell me I've been sleeping in the same room as a nuclear bomb this entire time? She said angrily.
The container has contained all harmful radiation. Even now, we are being shielded from its effects by the screen, Alpha said.
What the hell are you doing with a nuke? Asha asked. Alpha played with some controls on the box. Lucas recognized the Zolan word for stable.
I came across it in my travels. A human underwater military vessel had been beached a few miles inland. I salvaged the important parts from one of its warheads, as I figured it might be of use at some point in the future, perhaps even as a power source, though I did not imagine this would be its function.
You want to blow up the station with a nuke you took from a submarine, Lucas said slowly.
It is the only way. We simply do not have the firepower to bring down the station or its docked ship ourselves.
This is insane, Asha said. Coming from her, that was saying something. But she was right. What exactly happens when you detonate a nuke in space? Asked Lucas.
the same thing that happens when you detonate it on land, but in silence.
Was that Alpha's version of a joke? And what about us?
At that point, we must be a safe distance away, or we will share a similar fate.
Lucas's head was swimming with this added complication that involved the use of the most powerful weapon mankind had ever created. Alpha continued.
We must move this downstairs and prepare for departure. We should arrive at the station in a few hours' time.
He closed the lid of the new container. They all breathed a little easier. It was dark. The only light came from the cracks in the wall and the soft blue glow of the communicator Lucas clutched in his hand. Asha was cradling a sleeping Noah, who had in fact been sedated for the good of the mission and would be out for hours. There was almost no space inside the armory wall, and Lucas was pressed up against the metal and Asha like a sardine. The sooner this was over, the better. Alpha had to be the one to pilot the ship into the station and had promised to keep them posted through the communicator. His brain waves were now translated not through the speaker on his collar, but through the remote device, meaning he could speak to them from afar, and the other Zollins would be none the wiser. Additionally, he believed that as he processed what the others said to him, he could relay that through the communicator as well, allowing the pair of them to hear the conversations he had with the station soldiers. The downside of all this was that they had no covert way of communicating back to him that wouldn't draw suspicion, and he had simply ordered them to obey his commands to the letter. Lucas brought up a tiny monitor from the communicator that showed Alpha's view screen. They were approaching a dark planet, and Lucas could barely make out what appeared to be the station a short distance ahead. It looked like a much larger version of the Sentinel orbiters from Earth, with a more robust center and spindly arms branching out from all sides of it. Alpha made his first attempt at contact.
Come in, station. This is transport 1138-19455, requesting permission to dock and refuel.
Silence.
Come in, station. This is transport 1138-19455, requesting permission to dock and refuel.
Silence.
Come in.
Alpha was interrupted by a burst of static. A fuzzy image of a creature appeared on the view screen, but the feed was distorted, as was the audio.
Copy 1138. This is... We read... We are... Having difficulties with a... Storm.
Alpha replied...
Yes, I am having similar issues. Permission to dock and come aboard to speak in person? Granted. Why is a all the way here? It is difficult to understand your transmission. I will speak to you on board shortly. Copy.
Alpha guided the ship toward the station, which was much, much larger than it looked from a distance. It was now clear why it would take a nuke to destroy it. A few minutes later, a loud clank indicated they'd docked. Alpha spoke directly to them through the communicator.
Scrambling appears to be intact. If readers were functional, my identity and your presence would be known. All is normal. Stay where you are.
Lucas flipped the monitor's view to show Alpha walking down to the port side of the ship. Alpha tapped a few controls and the airlock slid open. A pair of unarmored creatures stood in the doorframe. They were right next to the nuclear crate, which Alpha had placed in the entryway earlier. The taller of the creatures spoke first.
Greetings, Captain. Apologies for the technical difficulties. This storm is one of the largest we have seen in years, and it was not in any of our forecasts. No apology necessary, Alpha said. I know how unstable the system can be. My cousin was stationed here 2 decades ago and complained often of such things. That was before my time, the tall one said.
The short one looked around the ship curiously, then spoke.
What is a transport doing in such a remote sector, and where is your crew?
Alpha took a deep breath.
It is fortunate this station is still in operation, or I fear I may have been left drifting forever. I am part of the crew of a recovery vessel sent to Earth.
Alpha presented some sort of chip, which the tall creature scanned. After he did so, he immediately stood at attention.
"Sorry, sir, I was not aware of your rank," he said.
Alpha had forged himself a convincing identity.
"Earth?"
The other creature was skeptical.
"We have not seen any returning ships from Earth in a few years now. I am aware my mission was of the utmost secrecy. We were sent to retrieve an artifact from the planet that would aid in the war effort."
Alpha motioned to the locked nuclear crate on the ground next to them.
"What is it?"
the tall one asked, lightly kicking the box with his claw.
"It is above my clearance to know, and certainly above yours as well. Yes, sir, apologies. I was sent here from my class ship, which is stranded a few sectors away. We took heavy asteroid damage during our departure, and the ship leaked fuel to the point where it could travel no further, and communications are down. They equipped this transport with the core in the hopes that I might return with fuel and assistance."
The shorter one spoke.
"You are running a core in this transport? Is such a thing even possible?" "My commander is talented with such things."
"And who is your commander exactly? That is classified," Alpha said calmly.
"Of course, sir, but we will need to verify this with Central."
The tall one spoke into his comm.
"Set up a link to Zala, and in the meantime, start giving our friend here some fuel."
"It is greatly appreciated," Alpha said. "I will ensure your cooperation is relayed to command."
The comm crackled.
"The storm will not let us connect to Zala, Chief,"
the tall one grunted.
"Unfortunate, I should have known. Care to come inside for some nourishment while we wait? It seems as if you have had quite a harrowing journey."
"Of course," Alpha said.
The short creature spoke.
"I will assemble a team to sweep the ship."
Alpha looked a bit unsettled.
"Is that really necessary?"
"Protocol," the short one said. "Anything from Earth has to be archived and searched with a report sent to command. I believe they are looking for something. Maybe your artifact."
Alpha thought quickly.
"Yes, perhaps. I am told it is of exceptional importance. Would you mind if I brought it aboard for safekeeping? I am not supposed to let it out of my sight."
"Absolutely, sir. Bring it inside."
The tall one motioned to the short one, who grumbled. He began to push the crate, which was on gyro loader but was still rather unwieldy. He bumped it against the wall, which made Alpha snarl. As they turned and walked off the ship, Alpha directed his thoughts to Asha and Lucas.
"Check fuel status."
Lucas thumbed through the communicator controls and saw that water levels were going up by the second. They'd gotten what they came for.
"Stay hidden," was Alpha's next command, and soon it was clear why.
6 soldiers marched through the airlock. They were only lightly armored, lacking full combat gear like the invasion troops he'd seen on Earth, but they were brandishing power weapons. He glanced at Asha, who had her eyes fixed on the monitor. As the team spread out, Lucas split his view into as many screens as he could, trying to keep track of them all. 4 were still visible, with the other 2 veering off to places unknown. The ones they could see scanned the bridge, and 2 made their way down to the elevator. The comm crackled back in, and Lucas realized that he could still hear Alpha's conversations, despite no longer being able to see them via monitor.
"Sir, what can you tell us about Earth, outside of your classified mission, that is?"
Alpha paused.
"It is a wretched place, and the Saurons there are among the most savage I have seen. We heard the raiding fleet was defeated."
It was hard to tell which creature was talking now.
"We underestimated their resolve, and they were more advanced than the Saurons we encountered on other outlying worlds. We took what resources we could, but the planet is now desolate and useless. Except for the artifact."
There was a hint of disbelief in the tone.
"Correct. Do you believe the invasion was a mistake? I am not one to speak ill of my superiors, and neither should you, crew chief. Of course, sir. Sorry, sir. I did not mean to imply—"
Suddenly, Asha motioned at the monitors violently. Lucas looked and saw a pair of guards outside the entrance to the armory. He immediately flipped off the comm, and they stood deathly still in silence and darkness. Noah stirred briefly in Asha's arms. The door opened, and Lucas could hear the sound of claws tapping against the metal floor. He attempted to regulate his breathing as best he could and tried to ignore the fact that back on Earth he'd been rather claustrophobic. Such petty fears had no place here or now. The soldiers stalked through the room, grunting at each other. Suddenly, the familiar electronic sounds of a keypad rang out. They were trying to open the locked weapons crates. After a few attempts, the harsh tone of rejection kept ringing out, and the soldier barked something at the other, and the two left the room. Lucas breathed a little easier.
"I don't like this," Asha whispered.
He flipped the comm back on.
"And that's why the is docked here. But repairs should be done within the week. They keep the crew on board at all times, however. They are not supposed to fraternize with us off-worlders."
"This is most unfortunate because there is a petty officer on board that is exceptionally attractive. I was stationed with her back on—"
The conversation was interrupted by another voice.
"Sorry to interrupt, sir, but we have made a connection with Zala."
He sounded nervous. This made Lucas nervous.
"The storm let you through?"
"Yes, the effects appear to be lessening."
Alpha shot a mental message through the comm.
"If fuel is ready, depart."
The nervous voice returned.
"They said the item they are searching for is not any artifact, but a Zalan, a traitor. They are patching through an image."
Another transmission from Alpha.
"If fuel is ready, depart."
Now another voice joined the scene.
"Sir, something must be wrong with the scanners. We are now detecting 15 Sorin life forms on board that ship."
"No."
"If fuel is ready, depart and detonate."
The sounds on the comm became a garbled mess as someone let out a blood-curdling scream. Alpha? They'd been discovered, and Lucas's heart thundered in the darkness as Asha let out an audible gasp.
"Subject has been apprehended. Crew chief is dead. Take the traitor to level 17 immediately as we await orders. Contact the highest-ranking officer on board the—"
"Shit, shit, shit,"
Lucas said as he kicked the panel out from in front of him. He stepped out into the light, shielding his eyes for a brief moment. Asha emerged behind him, holding Noah.
"We have to get to the bridge and get the hell out of here," she said.
"The bridge? We have to get Alpha."
"Are you crazy? He's on lockdown with God knows how many of them in there with him. How are we supposed to fly this thing without him? How are we going to make it to Sora?"
"You heard what he said. If fuel is ready, depart and detonate."
"You'd just leave him?"
"What choice do we have? And it's what he's telling us to do. He said to obey his orders at all costs."
"We know where they're keeping him."
"What, level 17? And you know how to get there?"
"We can figure it out."
Lucas paused to catch his breath. Adrenaline was surging through his system. He spoke again.
"Since when are you one to run from a fight?"
That hit the right note. Asha stood there scowling for a minute. She turned and placed Noah on the ground inside the wall, then reattached the panel.
"For the record, this is insane."
"Well, then you should be on board." Asha set to work unlocking every storage crate around her. Dozens of weapons revealed themselves. "Take what you need fast. If we're lucky, the entire station won't be alerted yet," Lucas said hurriedly. Just then, a wailing alarm sounded. Fantastic. Asha had her magnum already loaded up and her hatchet on her belt. She scooped up a few grenades and threw them in a pouch on her hip. Lucas grabbed his knife and sawed-off shotgun. He rifled through the box until he pulled out a Scandinavian assault rifle with a few matching clips strapped to it. Thank God Asha was organized. She pulled out a rather long machete from the box.
"We should go quiet when we can."
Lucas took his knife and fixed it to the front of his rifle as a bayonet. He wished Natalie was here with him now. The new weapon felt unfamiliar in his hands, but they had to work with what they could pull together in mere minutes. Once they were equipped with as much as they could carry, Lucas shuffled through the monitors. The soldiers on board were now running all over the place, and two were currently marching down the armory hallway toward them. Lucas signaled Asha to move to the door. He put away the monitor display and readied himself for what was to come. They stood on either side of the entryway. The door opened, and two soldiers entered the room.
Just as their peripheral vision recognized the threat, it was already too late. Asha leapt onto her creature and drove her hatchet through his skull, which erupted with black blood. As the other creature turned in horror, Lucas shoved his bayonet through the back of his neck, and he instantly fell into a heap on the ground. Wiping the dark blood from her eyes, Asha spun out into the hallway, and Lucas followed. The alarm still blared, echoing down the corridor, reaching from the station itself. The airlock was still open. As they approached the hallway that would lead them to the station, they peered around the corner. Three guards stood there, clutching weapons menacingly. "Now what?" Asha said, black blood streaming down her neck and chest. Lucas looked around and quickly put a plan into action. He aimed his rifle down the adjacent hallway they had just come from and opened fire. The bullets bounced around the hall, as did the echo of the blasts. The three creatures immediately took notice, and two of them ran toward the sound. Lucas and Asha stood with their backs on the walls. They didn't need to communicate to know what to do next. As the first creature arrived, Asha swung her machete upward, and it got about halfway through his head before it caught on a piece of unmovable bone, snapping the blade cleanly from the handle. The second creature met a similar fate as Lucas shoved his rifle into an exposed part of gray skin and ripped the blade upward. The creature fell over with a wail as blood spilled out of its midsection, and Lucas smashed the bayonet into his temple. Suddenly, a blast from an energy rifle came ripping through the corridor and blowing a hole in the wall and knocking them to the ground. The third guard had seen the fate of his two comrades and shot off two more quick bursts in their general direction, again missing the mark as he frantically adjusted the settings on his gun. After sitting idle for months at a desolate station, these soldiers didn't know quite what to do in such a circumstance. Asha ended the creature's panicked shooting with a well-placed magnum round that took off most of his head. The pair of them sprinted through the airlock and found themselves on board the alien space station. Chapter 19. The interior of the station was cavernous, the hallways meant for 8-foot-tall beings with long strides. It was dimly lit, illuminated mostly by the glow of holographic consoles. The alarm coated the area in red pulsing light and echoed off the metal walls at a volume that was almost deafening. Quickly, Lucas and Asha ducked into a nearby room that was mercifully empty. Asha closed the door behind them, familiar with the controls since they were the same as those on their own ship. Lucas scanned the room and found a unit he recognized as a data terminal. As he approached it, a holographic menu system appeared before him. "What the hell do we do now?" Asha said, as she had holstered her magnum and was trying to wring black blood out of her hair. "I'm trying to figure out how to get to Alpha." Lucas quickly scanned through the system. He could recognize words, but it was difficult to access data when he couldn't comprehend large chunks of what he was seeing. Finally, after what seemed like an eternity, he managed to pull up a 3-dimensional blueprint of the station, easy to navigate with simple touch controls. "Got it," he said. "We're on level 12 already, so 17 isn't that far. They've locked down the lift, but there should be a maintenance tunnel 5 rooms over that should get us there." Lucas shut down the terminal, and he and Asha readied themselves to leave the room. They burst out into the hallway and almost collided with a Zolan who was sprinting the other direction. He spun wildly into the wall to avoid them, and when he saw they were human, his eyes widened and he turned and kept running. He wasn't wearing armor and must have been a civilian or an incredibly ill-prepared soldier. By the time they regained their footing after almost being bowled over, he was already rounding the corner. They ignored him and pressed forward past 4 more doors. When they came to a 5th, it was already open. Peering inside, they could see a team of Zolans standing around the locked storage crate that contained the nuke. It was the room Alpha had been taken to when he first boarded the ship. A tall, dead Zolan lay on the floor, and blood pooled around their feet and the crate. They were scanning the storage container with small electronic devices and wearing protective suits that were apparently supposed to shield them from whatever danger lurked within. Asha turned to Lucas with a worrying look in her eye. "Those crates are strong, right?"
"Yeah, why?"
She gave a rare half-smile, reached into her bag, and pulled a pin on a grenade. "Oh, shit." The group inside had just enough time to notice the bouncing metal object before it exploded and tore through the 5 of them. Smoke shot out of the doorway. As Lucas and Asha entered the room, 3 were motionless on the floor with assorted limbs missing. 1 writhed around on the ground, howling in agony, and another was stumbling wildly around the room, blood pouring from the eyeholes of his protective suit. Asha silenced the one on the floor with her axe as Lucas emptied a 3-round burst into the chest of the blinded creature, who crashed into the wall and ceased moving. The crate sat in the middle of the room, scorched but undamaged. The fact that they were not incinerated along with the rest of the station indicated the risk of the grenade had been worthwhile. They quickly shut the door, and Lucas scanned the room for the entrance they sought. It took him a few minutes, but he managed to find the symbol for repair and pried off a panel, revealing a long downward tunnel.
"This is it," Lucas said, staring into the abyss.
"After you,"
Asha replied. There were loud bangs on the door behind them, prompting Lucas to disregard his misgiving and climb into the dark passageway. The opening was much too small for a Zolan and would barely even fit them. Maintenance must have been done by some sort of robot. Asha followed him in, securing the panel behind her so as not to give away a probable path. Lucas imagined the station was in such a state of chaos they wouldn't be able to organize anything like a coordinated search effort for at least a few minutes longer. The pair of them grasped at pipes and wires and slowly lowered themselves down. Lucas activated his comm and hooked it to his stained shirt. The glow lit up the tunnel, and he was able to see the Zolan symbol for 13 on a panel in front of him. Only 4 more to go. Suddenly, the comm spat out some static, and he could hear voices. He hadn't turned it on since they'd left the ship, and it hadn't occurred to him it would still be active. 2 creatures spoke.
"The traitor is from the clan? Were they not obliterated during that Sorin raid? I thought the same, but apparently he shipped out to Earth with the invasion fleet. What is he doing on a ship with all those Sorins? I do not know, but I am assuming that is part of his treachery. A science team is inspecting that object he brought on board with him. They do not want to relocate it, as it might be a trap."
Suddenly, Alpha's voice broke through. It was weary and hoarse, a reflection of his mental state.
"Detonate! Detonate!"
Lucas slipped and slid down the tunnel until he caught himself on a tangle of wires. Alpha's voice continued.
"Perhaps you are dead, as the station should be vaporized by now. I am sorry I have failed you."
The other voices broke in.
"It seems High Commander himself has been hunting him across the galaxy. Personally? Has such a thing ever happened before? Not that I know of. Do you believe the station will receive a reward for his capture? I would hope for a placement on... That would be reward enough. I would prefer my own ship. An amusing fantasy.
Detonate. Detonate."
Lucas climbed lower still. "At least we know he's still alive," he said.
"So this suicide mission still has some sort of purpose to it,"
Asha replied. Lucas's hands were coated in a mixture of grease and blood, and it was getting increasingly hard to hold onto the sides of the tunnel. Asha slipped, and her boot struck him in the forehead. He gritted his teeth but said nothing. They were only 1 level above the detention floor.
"Quiet now. We don't know how thin these walls are," Lucas said as he switched the comm off.
The alarm was barely audible now. It seemed to be confined to the upper docking floors. Lucas heard growling in the adjacent room and lowered himself down another few slippery rungs. Finally, the jagged glyph for 17 appeared in front of him. He grabbed Asha's calf, halting her descent. Slowly, he unhooked the panel and gently swung it outward. Light flooded into the tunnel, and Lucas squinted. The room in front of them was empty outside of some shelving units and a pair of holographic screens. Lucas stepped cautiously onto the floor, and Asha followed him out. He wiped his greasy hands on his dirtied cargo pants and drew his sawed-off shotgun. Asha clenched her magnum with both hands. Her entire upper body was caked in dried black blood. Lucas imagined he probably looked the same. As they crept into the hallway, they could hear the familiar guttural sounds of Zolan communication, though there was no way to tell how many there were. Lucas unhooked the knife from the rifle slung on his back. He spit on it and wiped it off on a clean patch of his shirt, which was not easy to find. He held up the blade and used the mirrored surface to see the hazy shapes of creatures in the next room. He held up 4 fingers to Asha, who nodded. She reached into her pack for a grenade, but Lucas raised his hand to stop her. In the cloudy view from his knife, he could make out that Alpha was strapped to the far wall to the right of the guards. Cuffs held each of his upper and lower claws in place, and even his neck was encased in a brace. Lucas couldn't tell the extent of his injuries from the murky reflection, but it was clear further use of explosives was out of the question. Wild West it was then. Lucas signaled to Asha, holding up three fingers, then two, then one. They rounded the corner together, Lucas unloading both barrels of his shotgun into the two guards on the right, Asha putting two magnum rounds in each of the others as they scrambled to raise their weapons. All four hit the ground at the same moment, and not one stirred afterward, though Lucas and Asha both stood ready just in case. When it was clear the battle was won, they turned to Alpha, who was breathing heavily and bleeding from slashes across his body. Lucas turned on his comm when he saw Alpha's communication collar on a table a short distance away. It still worked at range. They heard his voice immediately.
This was a most unwise decision.
Hi, Alpha.
Why are you on board?
I'd never been on an alien space station before, Asha said sarcastically.
You should be a light year away. Did you not receive my messages?
Lucas pried at the cuffs, but they wouldn't budge. If you could read our minds, you would have known that we weren't going to leave you here to be roasted by a nuke. How do we get you out of this thing? Alpha nodded in the direction of the crumpled pile of Zollan bodies.
A chip.
Lucas walked over and dug through the gore until he pulled out a device that made Alpha nod. He stuck it into a slot near the base of the contraption, and the cuffs all sprung open at once. Alpha dropped to the floor and collapsed backward onto his knees. Lucas offered him a hand. Alpha grabbed it with his good claw and wearily rose to his feet. He scooped up his comm collar and mechanical hand, which sat on the nearby table. His next acquisition was an energy pistol pried from the hands of a dead guard.
We must leave before reinforcements from the cruiser arrive. This station is sparsely manned, but the ship docked here will have a full battalion of troops.
Lucas looked around the room. We crawl down here, but you won't be able to fit through the way we came. Alpha waved his hand dismissively.
It is of no importance. I will override the lift lockdown.
Alpha marched across the room, and Asha and Lucas followed. At the far end, a door remained closed, and Alpha tapped away at the holo controls next to it.
A simple encryption, he said as the door flew open.
A startled-looking pair of Zollan soldiers stood inside the elevator. Lucas raised his shotgun, but by the time his finger reached the trigger, Alpha had blown a hole through each of their heads with a pair of shots from his newly acquired pistol. He calmly entered the lift, stepping over their bodies. Lucas and Asha looked at each other and did the same. The lift was almost as slow as the one on their ship. As they rose, Alpha plucked Lucas's communicator from his shirt. He pulled up a multiple monitor view of the arc, and the scene they saw was troubling. On every screen, Zollan soldiers swarmed throughout the ship, tearing it apart, hunting for Sorens.
That's a lot of them, Asha said. What exactly is the plan here?
Lucas was wondering the same thing. Alpha cycled through a few different screens.
Contingencies, he said coolly.
Alpha pressed a button, and the airlock door connecting the arc to the station slid shut.
What are you?
Lucas said slowly, before Alpha's next action revealed his intentions. He slid his claw to the right, and the monitor showed every door in the ship springing open, including the external airlocks. Soldiers flew across the monitors too quickly to see the looks of horror on their faces. The airlock cameras showed Zollans being pulled through the hallways and flung out into the vacuum of space. With the docking bay sealed, only the ship was venting, not the station. And the sole door still closed within the arc was the armory, where Noah remained inside the wall. After 30 seconds or so, no more soldiers were visible as Alpha cycled through the monitors and only bits of debris whirled through the screens toward the exits. Satisfied, he slid the switch back, all the doors closed, and the entryway to the docking bay reopened, just in time for the elevator to reach its final destination. The door opened, and no one was there to greet them, other than the piercing wail of the alarm. They sprinted down the hall and into the docking port, running across the pathway into the arc. Once they were inside, Alpha shut the door behind them. His mechanical voice rang out through the hall. "Bridge! Turret!" he commanded, and Lucas and Asha sprinted to man their respective stations. Assuredly, Alpha was heading down to the engine bay to prep the core. Lucas reached the bridge and fumbled through the controls, looking for the seldom-used disengage command. He finally located it, and the ship groaned as it detached itself from the station. Lucas brought the engines to life, and the ship banked hard to the right, veering away from the fuel depot. His monitor showed Alpha and Asha in their respective stations, both scrambling to get all their systems in order. Alpha shouted into the screen.
Accelerate quickly before the fighters launch!
Lucas had forgotten about their potential pursuers. The docked ship loomed in their rear view, but both it and the station were growing smaller in the distance.
Approaching safe distance, detonation in 7, 6, 5.
Lucas dialed up the speed even further. 4, 3. His eyes were glued to the view screen. 2, 1. He watched the station. Nothing. Alpha? He was staring intently at the station in his own monitor.
There should be...
Suddenly, a flash of white light enveloped Lucas's entire field of vision. There was no sound, but when his sight returned amidst the red spots, Lucas saw distant pieces of debris spreading outward from where the station once hovered, and a readout explaining that the installation had ceased to exist.
Touchdown, Asha said through the monitor. A faint glow was all that remained in the distance. The entire ship fell silent for a moment.
Lucas looked down and saw they were already approaching 12 million miles an hour, but it felt like they were standing still. Alpha's voice cut through the quiet.
Core activating.
On the view screen, there was a brief flash of an image that registered for less than a second. It was Omicron, his dark skin and bright eyes unmistakable, but in an instant he was gone. The stars blurred. And after a large moan and a worrying shudder, the view turned into the hazy tunnel of light that signified they'd arrived in their own custom-made wormhole. As Lucas waited for a minute, then 2, then 5, Omicron did not reappear and his readouts were blank. Eventually, Lucas felt his entire body relax for the first time in hours. He unplugged the neural cables from his temples and walked around his chair, stretching his arms out above his head. They'd done it again. A few minutes later, Asha came walking through the CIC entryway holding a yawning Noah, recently recovered from his hiding place.
Look who missed all the fun, Lucas said, smiling as the pair approached.
Yeah, good thing Alpha didn't vent the armory, or he'd be floating in space along with all those creatures and our weapons.
I had hoped you secured the child... Properly, said Alpha, entering from a different hallway.
We clearly thought of everything, Lucas said, walking forward to meet the trio.
Alpha touched his recently sealed slash wounds and winced. Though they were healing, the cuts would remain tender for some time.
I wanted to thank you for boarding the station to retrieve me.
Thank him, Asha said. I was ready to blow your gray hide to bits the way you were telling us to, but he had other ideas.
Alpha turned to Lucas.
I do not understand human honor codes, but I am in your debt.
Lucas shook his head. We've all been in yours for some time. Without you, we'd be dead in Portland, dead in Norway, dead next to Mars, or dead orbiting a dwarf star.
We are not at our destination yet, Alpha said, and cast a worried look toward the view screen.
Asha fumbled in her pack with one hand while holding onto Noah with the other. She produced an ornately designed crystal bottle filled with brown liquid. There was Norwegian writing on it, but Asha was waving it around too much for Lucas to read it. It's brandy, Asha said. I looted it from the mansion back on Earth. Something that looks this fancy can't be bad. I bet this bottle cost more than my first car. The crystal glinted from the light of the holo controls around the CIC. This seems like as much of a special occasion as we're going to get, she continued. Lucas smiled.
Well, sounds good to me. Have any glasses with that, or are we going to have to vaporize and inhale it?
That got a chuckle out of both Asha and Alpha. Suddenly, Lucas heard a scratching sound from across the room. The doorway darkened for a moment, then a creature stepped into the light, a soldier. He was dragging an injured leg, his power armor was splintered, and his veins were popping out all over his body from the depressurization of the ship. He raised his energy rifle with one shaking hand, pointing it at Asha's back. The scene was in slow motion for Lucas. He grabbed Asha by the shoulder with his left hand, throwing her and Noah behind him. She stumbled forward, crashing into Alpha as the bottle of brandy shattered on the floor. With his right hand, he raised the sawed-off shotgun. Before he could pull the trigger, there was a flash of light, and his midsection exploded.
Chapter 20.
woke in a crater. The crater. Lucas got to his feet slowly, struggling against the shifting sand, which poured off his clothing as he rose. It was night, but a brighter one than he could remember seeing in years. The menacing cloud cover was gone, revealing a full moon and a billion stars. With no artificial light sources polluting the sky, he could see straight into the heart of the Milky Way. He looked around and found the familiar crater walls stretching out all around him. Ahead were the mangled remains of skyscraper metal, buried far deeper than the wreckage he'd previously seen. In the distance, he could see shadowy figures gliding across the crater floor but couldn't make them out. Were they human? Creature? He was too far away to tell. Trudging through the sands, he called out, "Hello? Anyone? Who's out there?" No response from the shadows. "Can you hear me?" he shouted. Only the howling wind answered him until they cannot. Lucas jumped and turned to find the source of the voice. It was a woman clad in white, with bright green eyes and flowing platinum hair. She was iridescent, radiating light out onto the floor of the crater. She stood on the ground but did not sink into the sand. Lucas spoke to her. "Who are you?" She smiled. "You know me." Lucas searched his memory. "All my love. Natalie?" The photo brought to life. He wasn't in a pod, that was for sure. A realization dawned on him. "Am I dead? That is not for me to say," she answered calmly, staring out into the distance. "Who are they?" Lucas asked, motioning to the shadows in the distance. "They are the slaughtered. You're slaughtered." The shadows grew closer. "They come to greet you." Lucas felt an intense pang of terror as the shadows continued to move toward him. Natalie stood calmly at his side with a faint smile on her face. He had no weapons, and as he turned to run, he found his feet rooted in the sand. "What's happening?" he said, panicked. Natalie turned to him. "Don't be afraid." The shadows were now so close, Lucas began to recognize them. A mechanic. A tattooed band member, a platoon of soldiers, all marching in formation. Natalie eyed the leader as he passed. Other men, women, and creatures streamed by, all of whom Lucas recognized. He hadn't forgotten any of them. They walked past him and Natalie, empty eyes fixed straight ahead, ignoring his presence. The air was cold. A collection of ragged cannibals trudged by him, and in the rear a bearded giant loomed, taking one step for every two of theirs. Behind them was a troop of creature soldiers, taking bird-like strides across the sand. Lucas still couldn't move. Finally, the last creature's shadow passed, and Lucas pivoted to see the herd shuttle off into the darkness. Turning back again, he saw Natalie's arm extended. Following her gesture, Lucas saw two more shapes walking toward him. It was far away, but it was a woman holding the hand of a child. They were too far to be seen clearly. Sonia and Nathan? Asha and Noah? A low rumble echoed from over the horizon. The ground shook. The shadows stood still. "What is that?" Lucas asked, his voice a whisper. "He comes," answered Natalie. The shadows turned to dust. Behind them, a colossal claw gripped the far crater wall. It must have been 40 stories high. A figure shot up into the sky, blacking out the moon and half the stars. A pair of blue rings shone brightly in the darkness. It was Omicron, 10,000 feet tall. He spoke in Sorin, and the voice appeared to be coming from inside Luke's own head. "Your journey ends." He raised his massive claw into the air. Natalie took two steps forward, then turned around to face Lucas. She hovered a foot above the ground and bent down to kiss him on the forehead. A second later, Omicron's claw came crashing down. Lucas woke with a jolt on the laboratory table, gasping for air. The dream was over, but it took a few seconds for his mind to understand it. The lab was dim, but the minimal light still hurt his eyes.
He looked down to find himself clad only in underwear. A long, curved scar made its way from his left hip to his collarbone, with a few inflection points along the way. With bleary eyes, he looked around the dark room, but neither Alpha nor Asha were anywhere to be found. But when Lucas saw what was next to him, he fell off of the table, pulling a mass of wires attached to his body with him. It had to be another nightmare. He quickly ripped out each wire from his skin, ignoring the small bursts of pain that followed. Alarms began to sound on a nearby console, and Lucas grabbed it to help him get to his feet. As he did so, he rose up next to another makeshift table where a human body lay. It too was hooked up to machines, but was obviously dead. It was a young blonde man who looked to be about 20. He had a calm expression on his face for someone displayed so grotesquely. His entire torso was splayed open, his ribs were broken off, and there was a huge gulf inside of him. Lucas saw a heart and the bottoms of lungs, but the rest was a mess of gore under what appeared to be a plastic shell. Lucas stumbled backward, knocking over a different machine, and his stomach heaved. But no vomit came, and he was met by crippling pain instead. He staggered across the room, a few wires still trailing behind him, attached to his legs and back. He could barely walk, as if his brain didn't even understand the concept. Lurching forward, he dove out into the hallway and through the open door across the way, a door that had forever been locked. Lucas pulled himself to his feet again, surprised he hadn't been jolted out of the nightmare by the surging pain through his midsection, and yet the scene continued. The room before him was awash in a harsh red light. On either side stood six tanks filled with fluid, and a human being was suspended in all but one of them. Lucas took one small step forward at a time as his jaw hung open. Their bodies were wrapped ankle to neck in bandages laced with circuitry, and each had tubes coming out of multiple points on their bodies. There were five males and six females of varying skin tones and ages, though none looked older than 40. The youngest appeared to be a girl to his immediate left who couldn't have been more than 15. Lucas leaned up against the control panel for her tank, using it to brace himself as pain surged through him. The display showed a globe of Earth, and the unmistakable landmass of China was glowing a bright red. Below it, a heart monitor beat slowly. She's alive. Lucas stumbled to the next tank. Inside it was a tall, dark-skinned man. On his globe, a country in Africa was highlighted. Zimbabwe, maybe? His heart beat as well. Lucas looked to the other globes. A young woman from Brazil, a middle-aged man from Greece. The Philippines, Iran, Australia, Chile, France, Japan, Denmark. The lone empty tank showed the large shape of Russia in bright red. Lucas fell to his knees, his head swimming and internal pain gripping him. Wake up! Wake up! But the woman who entered the room wasn't an angelic visage this time. It was Asha. Oh, shit, she said when she saw him. Alpha! She raced over to Lucas and grabbed his jaw. She turned his head from side to side and saw a vacant look in his eyes. He felt like he was about to black out. He heard the familiar tapping of Alpha's claws on the floor, and a metallic voice spoke. We must return him to the laboratory. Alpha hoisted up Lucas as best she could, while Alpha took hold of his other arm, and the pair dragged him into the lab where they rolled him back onto the table. All the lights came on, and Lucas's eyes started tearing up from sensitivity before they rolled back into his head. He's going! Asha shouted. Alpha grabbed a device and put it next to Lucas's temple, and his vision faded to blackness. Once again, he opened his eyes, and this time found both Asha and Alpha next to him. Looking down, he saw many of the cables reattached to his body. He started to struggle, but Asha put her hand on his shoulder. Stop, she said sternly. As much as I'm glad you're awake, I'll kick your ass if you try to get up. Alpha's head came into view.
Did I not say he would regain consciousness?
Yes, you did, Dr. Frankenstein.
Was he an accomplished surgeon on your world? Alpha asked earnestly. I am impressed with his survival given our limited medical resources on this ship.
Lucas tried to talk, but his voice was hoarse. Can someone? Asha fished around and came back with a container of water. She fed it to Lucas and it trickled down his throat and face. It was enough.
Can someone explain what's happening here? Who is that?
He rolled his head in the direction of the dead body next to him.
Oh, you mean Vlad? Said Asha.
What?
Alpha chimed in.
I do not know why she refers to him as that. Specimen 11 is the reason you are alive.
Lucas was woozy from whatever pain remedy he'd been given. He fought to keep focus.
Where did he come from?
This is a fun story, Asha said as she sat on the end of the table with her legs crossed.
Specimens 1 through 12 were acquired on your planet before we met. Part of my mission there was to collect Saurons, humans, for further study. Perhaps your localized species would have some significant biological distinction of interest that the other world's populations lacked.
Lucas propped himself up on his elbows. Alpha continued.
During the war, I collected a healthy specimen from as many diverse regions of the planet as the ship's course would allow. They were to be studied on the journey back to Zala and housed there for further use.
Alpha checked a nearby machine that was hooked up to Lucas. He nodded, satisfied.
But they're alive.
Technically, yes, but realistically, no.
What does that mean?
When the ship crashed and lost power, they went without oxygen for a prolonged period of time. By the time I was able to restore it, every specimen had ceased all neural activity.
They're brain dead, Asha clarified. But how have you kept them alive all this time?
The liquid in which they are suspended is what feeds them. Their hearts beat and blood pumps through their veins, but they will never awaken.
Lucas didn't understand. Why have you kept them all this time? I thought you would have eaten them when you were starving, scavenging for parts. Alpha sighed.
It was a difficult prospect to resist, but before I met the pair of you, they were to be all that was left of your species when the ship left Earth. They may not live, but their genetic material is valuable. Their preservation took precedence over my hunger.
Why did you keep this from us?
I was not sure how the two of you would react, as it does appear rather morbid. Though I imagine you understand the reasoning, do you not think that your own scientists captured many Zalans for similar study?
Lucas pondered that for a moment. The answer seemed obvious.
I suppose so. It's still a bit bizarre to see. I was sure I was dreaming. I almost think I still am.
You have regained consciousness, I assure you.
And Vlad?
What did you do to him? Asha hopped off the table and took over storytelling. When that last bastard showed up, you got blasted pretty bad. By the time I shot him, your intestines were all over the floor. It was unpleasant. She traced her finger lightly along his scar. He was so doped up with painkillers, he couldn't even feel her touch. Alpha picked you up and raced you down here. He ran off and a minute later came back with poor Vlad here. By the time I could manage to ask where he'd pulled a fully grown human from, he'd already carved out his stomach to replace your ruptured one. She looked over at the Russian on the table. Once you were stable, Alpha showed me the room and explained. We've kept Vlad on ice in case you ended up needing any of his other parts. So far, besides the stomach, you've gotten a kidney, a liver, and about 20 feet of intestine. Lucas turned to Alpha. What happened to the precedence of their lives?
I deemed yours more valuable than his, as you still possess cognitive function.
Alpha was always so sentimental. Lucas felt around his midsection with his hands, but again couldn't feel anything. We were a transplant and blood type match for all those organs?
Our medicine has no requirement of such things. The organs have been adapting to your body over the course of the past 35 days.
Lucas was shocked. I've been unconscious for over a month. He felt his face, where there was only light stubble. Had Asha been tending to him the way he had with her? Though it seemed he had been out of commission for far longer.
You should rest now,
Alpha said, typing a few commands into a nearby machine. I've been resting for a month.
It is a monumental achievement that you have regained consciousness, but your body is still recovering from the shock of your trauma. Rest now, and you can move back to your quarters soon.
When Lucas woke the next day, he found all the wires, save a few, detached from his body, and a neatly folded pile of clothes next to him. He unclipped the remaining cords. This time, no alarm sounded. Sliding into a t-shirt, jeans, and socks, he found he had only minimal discomfort where there had been crippling pain. The table next to him was now bare, and his savior Vlad had been carted off to God knows where. He found himself able to walk without staggering, and though his head was cloudy, he